Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasagay. Shoal Lake First Nation is preparing to sue the City of Winnipeg in the water dispute. The First Nation's Crown Gathering is around the corner, and it's hoped that issues around education, economic development, and housing will be discussed. Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi discusses the position of the Anishinaabeg Nation, and Coastal First Nations in BC is sticking by its tanker ban in the face of the hearings into Enbridge's proposed Northern Gateway Pipeline. Sagamuck, Anishinaabeg, and Ontario is working on a positive relationship in the mining industry, and a song has been making its way around the world's northern communities ahead of the 2012 Arctic Winter Games, and we'll get to have a listen to it later on in the program. All these stories plus great tunes coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. First Nations are preparing for their meeting with the Prime Minister and other key cabinet members. Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi hopes the Crown First Nations gathering will be more than just for looks.
We want it to be more than just a photo opportunity for the Prime Minister. This should be the renewal and start of fostering relations with First Nations and the Crown to get some traction on our issues and to finally do something about our issues. There have been many initiatives such as the Nielsen Task Force Report, the Penner Report, the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, the Kelowna Accord in Ontario, the Upper Washington Inquiry, that have all made recommendations about how the Crown can address First Nations issues, and yet we haven't got any traction on these issues.
Madabi says he also hopes to see an ongoing process with the Crown to resolve issues in the areas of education, treaty, and economic development. Madabi adds a short meeting on the 24th isn't going to solve everything and would like to see a long-term working group. He says whatever the outcome is, the Anishinaabeg Nation will continue to be proactive.
As our leaders in the Anishinaabeg Nation, are saying, and what I'm saying is that with or without them, we're going to make change happen. And, it'll be so much easier if we can all get on the same page to resolve some of the long-standing issues in this country.
Elsewhere, the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples is studying the impacts of a proposed federal bill from 2010 on status membership. So far, there have been sessions in several cities throughout the country. In Ontario, lawyer Naomi Metallic facilitated a session on the membership bill in Sault Ste. Marie. She told the Sioux Star that the feedback she's received on the bill from First Nation citizens is the same and people are frustrated. Discussions around the issue include unstated paternity, Indian registration, First Nations jurisdiction over citizenship, governance, and identity. The findings will be presented in February and will be available on OCAP's website. The fight over Winnipeg's water source is starting to boil over. Shoal Lake First Nation has plans to sue the city over its use of water in the lake, which the First Nation maintains it didn't give up the rights to the resources and is protected by treaty. Mike Myers, a consultant for the band, says the water issue is not new.
Since 1912, Shoal Lake's water has been used to be the economic engine of Winnipeg. This water was given to them by the International Joint Commission and the province of Ontario, which was not their water to give. So the nation has been arguing that and has been trying to raise that as an issue ever since it first started. Ironically, when we were looking at the historical record, one of the guys that was used to be the Indian agent out here in 1914 becomes the mayor of Winnipeg. So we think there's been some collusion and stuff that went on back in those days.
Plus, the band wants to get an injunction to stop the city from selling its water and sewer services. Meanwhile, the city maintains that it doesn't owe Shoal Lake First Nation any compensation for selling water and sewer services. Myers adds Shoal Lake First Nation won't back down from its fight with Winnipeg.
So basically, that says to us that, bring it on, let's have a court case, and let's duke it out.
Meyer says the band has been trying to have discussions about this issue with the city, province, and federal government since the 1980s. The band is prepared to launch its court case January 20th. Winnipeg Mayor Sam Katz could not be reached for comment. Warmer than normal temperatures are wreaking havoc for communities in northern Manitoba. The province is considering asking the Canadian Forces to get supplies into remote First Nations. The Winnipeg Free Press reports northern chiefs in the province declared a state emergency earlier this week because the winter road is being delayed several weeks due to warmer temperatures in the region. So far, one community has already run out of fuel, and a second one is close to running on empty. There are also concerns that there won't be enough time this winter to ship the government-promised supplies to upgrade water infrastructure in the Island Lake region. Also in Manitoba, the feds have ordered a referendum in Rideau River and Anishinaabe First Nation. Voters will decide on how to elect their next chief, either through the Indian Act election system or by custom election. Community members will make their decision later this month. Two chief and councils have been at odds in the community for some time, and Ottawa has since frozen the band's accounts. Hearings into Enbridge's proposed Northern Gateway pipeline are well underway, and Coastal First Nations won't be presenting until this fall after the First Nations under its umbrella have made their presentations about how the pipeline will affect the communities along the coast. Art Sterrett is the executive director of the organization. He says Coastal First Nations have maintained their opposition to the project after analyzing its impacts about 8 years ago. Sterrett says the project is just not worth it.
There are about 30,000 jobs that depend on the environment that we have today. And $1.5 billion in revenue into British Columbia every year. And these are sustainable jobs, renewable jobs. They happen every year. To ask British Columbians and coastal First Nations to accept a project that is dealing with a non-renewable resource, to jeopardize all of this, an industry in large part that's been carrying on for about 100 years. You know, their canneries and processing and fishing and all species has been going on for well over 100 years on the coast of BC. To try and interrupt that for the sake of, a project that's going to create maybe 100, 150 jobs maximum in BC, is lunacy. It just doesn't make any sense.
Sterrett says when organization Coastal First Nations makes its presentation before the panel, they want to ensure the panel recognizes the risks inherent in the project. Sagamuk Anishinaabe in Ontario has signed a memorandum of understanding with mining company Quadra FNX. Chief Paul Ashkagagin says under the MOU, the First Nation will participate in the mining company's closure plan of the site.
Well, one of the things we're going to participate in is the finalization of the advanced exploration closure plan. So that'll be a first for Sagamuk, because in the past, we've always had these closure plans sent to us, and we're given 45 days to respond. So this is a new way we're going to undertake this and develop it jointly with Quadra FNX. So that's something very positive, we think.
The company is undertaking an advanced exploratory project over the next 3 years, and Chief Operating Officer with Quadra FNX, Michael Winship, says the company will be looking for more nickel and copper.
Well, we've made quite a exploration discovery drilling from surface of a high-grade copper and nickel ore body, and to further advance the project, we're going to need to sink some shafts and do some further drilling at depth, so that's the next phase that we'd like to proceed with.
Ashkagagin adds that the relationship with the mining company has been good from the start. The chief also says the community has been preparing members to work in the mining industry over the past 7 years. In Saskatchewan, two grandparents are on trial against charges of child neglect in Regina. CBC News reports that the man and woman are trying to prove that they didn't neglect their young granddaughter. The girl was born in BC and had been living with her mother, and she was placed in foster care in 2007 after it was found out that her mother was a drug addict. The girl is now 7 years old. A BC social worker told court that the girl was happy and smart while in foster care. The grandparents gained custody later that year and brought her to their home on their First Nation. But the girl was taken out of their custody in 2008 when it was found her health had deteriorated, and the grandparents were charged with failure to provide the necessities of life. A judge ordered a publication ban on details that would identify the girl. Two men in BC are sitting in jail after being convicted of defrauding two Aboriginal organizations of almost $1 million. Craig Morrison was given 2 years and his co-accused was handed an 18-month jail term. The Vancouver Sun reports the men pleaded guilty to fraud over $5,000 after they were caught skimming money from the Aboriginal Council of BC and the BC Aboriginal Fisheries Commission. The fraud took place during November 2002 to November 2005. A song has been making its rounds in the world's northern communities. It's the 2012 Arctic Winter Games theme song Relay, and it actually started making its rounds last year. Pam Boyd is the chair of the Arctic Winter Games theme song Relay. Boyd says the song evolves through many of the communities as the communities add to or recreate the song. For example, Boyd said a community in Russia made the song their own.
As a matter of fact, in Russia, in Yamalo Nenets, they had the song translated into their indigenous language, and then they had this beautiful choral group perform it in their language, and it was just so great.
The theme song Relay's last stop will be in Whitehorse later this month. After the song has completed its rounds, the official version will be unveiled at the opening ceremonies of the Arctic Winter Games in March. Yukon musicians Root Sellers created the original theme song. And that's your National Aboriginal News. Wahb Kanew is an artist and journalist in Winnipeg, and he's also the host of the 8th Fire series on CBC. And so here's Live by the Drum by Wahb Kanew.
We're young edition of crimes. Let's drop that liquor to Woodstock Barnum. Geronimo. There's rhythm in the walk from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. There's rhythm in the water from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. Red man live by the drum. Yellow man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
Black man live by the drum. White man live by the drum. Where I'm from, we say the lick is drum. When you battle in the night, you could hear the beat hum. Some time ago, rhyme and flow, always phenomenal. We lost that rhythm, now it's time to find it, yo. Travel overseas, oversee and sea breeze. From the west coast, where they still are drumming on the trees. Down to New Eland Z's, where they slapping on their knees. Hearing Ebos, Sheltos, modern Maori fellows. Party rocker, haka, staka, gama, they are feltos. Come with me and come with me, come and see, yo, come on. Say hello, est de des messages du village, au village très loin. Et peut-être en Guinée, où est toujours dans ce rêve. Talking from Africa, back to America. Across the land, we share each other's peace in the area. Whenever there is dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. Searching for the key to life, it was here the whole while. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. Man live by the drum. Yellow man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
Black man live by the drum.
Live by the drum.
White man live by the drum. Africa Bambada, Africa Bada Bum. Shiva Drum said nada, and that is where we're from. Nowhere, everywhere, everyone from the nun. Drum ring, hoop dance in a circle round the sun. On the beat like a horse to the sky I ride. With Siberian shamans there by my side. Heard a drum in the funeral of Vietnam. For the Hmong, we sing the same song in my land. We band together, just together we're a band. Hustlers in harmony, in tune with the land. No, I can't say that, unless I take a bass shooter. Walking beauty to the beat, and remain a straight shoot. We all have our own tongues and instrumentals. But party together, when we find the right tempo. So dance, dance, dance your style. Searching for the key to life, it was here the whole while. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. There's rhythm in the water, from where my life come. There's power in the air, we live by the drum. So dance, dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style. So dance, dance, dance your style.
Go Lake First Nation is getting ready to sue the city of Winnipeg for its water use in the close by lake. Meanwhile, Sam Katz, the mayor of Winnipeg, doesn't think Shoal Lake's claims have any merit. Mike Myers is a consultant for Shoal Lake First Nation, and first he gives us some background on the issue.
Since 1912, Shoal Lake's water has been used to be the economic engine of Winnipeg. This water was given to them by the International Joint Commission and the province of Ontario, which was not their water to give. So the nation has been arguing that and has been trying to raise it as an issue ever since it first started. Ironically, when we were looking at the historical record, one of the guys that was used to be the Indian agent out here in 1914 becomes the mayor of Winnipeg. So we think there's been some collusion and stuff that went on back in those days. But that's the heart of the issue, is that it's the illegal taking of Shoal Lake water. They're authorized to take up to 100 million gallons a day. The most they've ever taken so far has been 82 million. And right now, they currently use about 52 million gallons a day. And so the nation's issue is that the city of Winnipeg and the province of Ontario owe them compensation for the theft of that water.
So who authorizes the city of Winnipeg to take the water out of Shoal Lake?
It was authorized two times, one by order in council by the province of Ontario, based on the theory that the majority of the lake is within Ontario. And then it was done in a follow-up because Shoal Lake is connected to Lake of the Woods, so therefore it's part of the International Boundaries Treaty between Great Britain and the United States. So the International Joint Commission, which regulates boundary waters, also had to give its approval. And those two approvals were given back in 1912, without ever getting the nation's consent to take that water.
And so now I understand that the city of Winnipeg is looking to extend its water and sewer services and perhaps sell some of those services. And so what's at stake here for Shoal Lake First Nation?
Well, since 1912, in the past 100 years, that volume of water passing through this territory has just severely disrupted the whole ecosystem. It's wiped out wild rice beds, it's disrupted spawning grounds, the amount of the flooding has destroyed the berry and medicine areas, it has affected the wildlife in this area. Burial grounds have been inundated because of the flood. And the flood has to exist. They have to move this water from Lake of the Woods into Shoal Lake, because if the city took Shoal Lake's water only, the lake would be empty in 3 months. And so you have this huge, basically, kind of a environmental conspiracy going on that disrupts the entire ecosystem, not only of Shoal Lake, but Lake of the Woods as well, for supplying water to the city of Winnipeg.
And so what's Shoal Lake doing about this?
We've been trying since the 1980s, actually, to get talks going to try to get the federal government and the province of Manitoba, Ontario, and the city of Winnipeg to the table to open up discussions. We've not had any success whatsoever. The nation has submitted a specific claims about the flooding itself, and that is in negotiations, but only with Canada and Ontario. Manitoba has not come to the table on that. They've been invited, and they haven't come to the table. And so we sent them a letter, a copy of which I sent you. Our lawyer sent them a letter a few weeks ago telling them you have until January 20th to respond to us and to indicate whether or not you want to negotiate. And if you don't, the lawyers are authorized to initiate a court case. Now, there was an article on page A5 of the Winnipeg Free Press this morning. And the headline says, "City owes nothing to reserve in water dispute," the official says. And the official they're quoting is Diane Sacher. She's the director of the City Water and Waste Department for Winnipeg. Hmm. So basically that says to us, you know, bring it on. Let's have a court case and let's duke it out.
That was Mike Myers, consultant for Shoal Lake First Nation. The long-awaited First Nations Crown Gathering is just around the corner, and expectations are high or low, depending on who you talk to. And for the Anishinaabeg Nation, Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi hopes something will come out of the meeting next week between Chiefs and Prime Minister Stephen Harper. But he says regardless of the meeting's success or not, the Anishinaabeg Nation will remain proactive when dealing with issues.
Well, we want it to be more than just a photo opportunity for the Prime Minister. This should be the renewal and start of fostering relations with First Nations and the Crown to get some traction on our issues and to finally do something about our issues. There have been many initiatives such as the Nielsen Task Force Report, the Penner Report, the Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, the Kelowna Accord in Ontario, the Upper Wash Inquiry, that have all made recommendations about how the Crown can address First Nations issues, and yet we haven't got any traction on these issues. So what's happening on the 24th is we're meeting with the Prime Minister and some of the Cabinet, and we're looking at some areas in relation to some of the sessions that's going on treaties and land rights. We're looking at education and health issues. We're looking at economic development issues and a number of other issues, but those are the main ones. But I think probably more importantly, we hope to come out of there with a further process. One-day meeting with only a few hours of dialogue is not going to solve these long-standing problems. So we're hoping for some kind of an ongoing process, but not an ongoing process that's going to take forever. I mean, all the answers are already there in terms of, even the more recent Kelowna Accord and the Royal Commission work that did an intensive, comprehensive analysis about what's needed in our communities. So we want to move and perhaps approach for some kind of an AFN cabinet table that works, very vigorously on addressing issues. And maybe culminating First Minister's Conference where we can, get some agreement on where we take some of these issues like treaty implementation. And we also hope to send a message to the Prime Minister that, if he's really honest about Crown First Nations relationship, that he and his government need to cease their extinguishment policies, relating to our inherent rights policy, land claim policy. Some of the stuff that they're doing in relation to First Nations issues, they're not driven from First Nations. They're some outside jurisdiction trying to impose their answers on how we want, as First Nations, to develop our future. It will never work as long as some outside body is trying to provide answers for us. We have to develop our own solutions to our problems. We just need to have the shackles of legislation and government reluctance to deal with land claims and treaty rights so that we can have stable economies and look after ourselves. So that's a lot to try for in a few hours there on the 24th. But nonetheless, we want to establish more dialogue.
Well, with respect to addressing some of the issues that you mentioned, like treaty implementation, education issues, economic development, and others, so you would imagine that there are solutions there. And is the Anishinaabeg Nation posing any solutions to these issues to be brought forward at the meeting January 24th?
Well, definitely. We have been working for some time now on treaty implementation and trying to establish, a treaty commission with each of our treaty areas, so that we can do treaty implementation. We've been looking at restoration of jurisdiction on governance. We've been looking at restoration of jurisdiction on education. Where we want to talk about restoration of jurisdiction on our lands and resources. And part of these components also deal with trying to stop the side that's going on in our communities with respect to our citizenship. We should be determining who our citizens are, not the Indian Act Registry, which is a process that's basically eliminating our people from being status Indians or being Anishinaabe. So there's many messages there, a meeting on the 24th is not going to resolve everything. So that's why we're seeking an ongoing process that is more results driven, and something that we don't expect, you know, we want to drag on for years and years and years. We think a lot of the answers are already here. We've got to implement them, and we've got to have the political will, you know, to address the reality in this country that First Nations are not going anywhere, that First Nations have always been here for hundreds of thousands of years, and that this government has the federal government and the French government have a responsibility to finish what was not completed in the Constitution Act in the early 80s. There was supposed to be a major First Minister's meeting where to deal with jurisdiction. What is federal jurisdiction? What's provincial jurisdiction? And what's First Nations jurisdiction? And where there may be areas of shared jurisdiction. If we can resolve that, those type of questions, that'll really resolve a lot of the problems we're having in any one of the areas that I've talked about, whether it's economic in terms of our resources and our education or health or our social services or anything. So, you know, I think when the government understands that, you know, we'll get somewhere.
There's a lot of news reports out, and a lot of people are skeptical about that meeting because really little has changed. We talked about the RCAP report, the Pena report, the Kelowna, and not a lot has changed in the past 2 to 3 decades. And how hopeful are you that you will see some change after this meeting?
Well, I guess as our leaders in the Anishinaabeg Nation are saying, and what I'm saying is that with or without them, we're going to make change happen. And, you know, it'll be so much easier if we can all get on the same page to resolve some of the longstanding issues in this country. And, you know, we can't be just reacting. That's what's going on. We're reacting. Look at what's gone on in this country lately with, you know, crisis in the northern communities. You know, reacting to situations that should have been dealt with. By having First Nations have better control over what happens to the lands and the resources in their territory so that they can have stable economies, they can have healthy, vibrant communities. And everybody, every nation strives for, you know, strong government, strong economies, strong social cultural and spiritual aspirations. We're not saying anything different. And so we think, you know, we've been around a long time. We're a resilient people. You know, whether it's this government or the next government that comes along, you know, we're still going to make this happen.
That was Patrick Madabi, Grand Council Chief of the Anishinaabeg Nation. Now here's Wayne LaValle with All My Relations. Thank you. Sagamuk Anishinaabeg has recently signed a memorandum of understanding with a mining company for advanced exploration work in the community's traditional territory. Chief Polish Gogagin says it's a positive relationship which will see future economic growth for the First Nation.
We've been in discussions with them for the past year and a half. They came to us and wanted to talk about this. It's an advanced exploration project that they're going to undertake at the Victoria Mine property. Now, this mine, I believe, operated into the late 1800s and early 1900s. There was a mine there, a small town called Mond. So we've been talking with them for about a year and a half, 2 years, I guess.
So where exactly is that located?
It's located, I believe it's called the Victoria Township. It's probably around the Worthington area. At least that's the access road that you take to get in there, I believe.
So how close is that to your community?
It's probably about 60, 70 kilometers from our community, and it borders the our eastern traditional territory boundary, which is the Vermilion River area.
And so, what's the company looking for?
From what I understand, there's some significant nickel and copper deposits. There.
All right, so with respect to the MOU, what are the benefits for Sagamuk?
Well, one of the things we're going to participate in is the finalization of the advanced exploration closure plan. So that'll be a first for Sagamuk, because in the past we've always had these closure plans sent to us, and we're given 45 days to respond. So this is a new way we're going to undertake this and develop it jointly with Quadra FNX. So that's something very positive, we think. And I guess flowing from that, we're going to sit down and talk about how we're going to be involved in the environment monitoring protection, also the contracts and employment opportunities.
So how did the relationship start from the beginning? I know this might be a difficult question, but considering all the issues that have been going on the past while in the Ring Fire area with some problems with some of the mining companies.
Well, we didn't experience any of those difficulties, that I read about from the Ring of Fire. The company basically knocked on our door, and we began to talk about the project and what they would like to do, and I felt that they were that they really wanted to talk to us and that they wanted us to be involved.
Mm-hmm. And so with the MOU, is there any monetary amounts in there?
Not really, other than to look at, having some financial resources available to the community so that it could participate in looking at the closure plan. Being involved in developing the closure plan, undertaking consultations, that kind of thing. There's nothing really there at this point about, some financial commitment there because of the mining operation, because there isn't a mining operation yet. But it is an item that is very important to us. If you know, if this project should proceed to another closure plan that describes the construction, production, and closure of a mine.
That was Paul Ishgagagan, chief of Sagamok Anishinaabeg. Coastal First Nations is an organization with 10 BC First Nations under its umbrella. Those communities have taken a firm position against the proposed pipeline by Enbridge. They have also imposed a tanker ban in their territories, prohibiting oil tanker traffic to and from the proposed pipeline. Hearings into the pipeline are ongoing for the next year and a half, and organization Coastal First Nations won't be presenting before the panel until this fall, but Executive Director Art Sterrett spoke with BOMCEDA about the organization's position.
Coastal First Nations, obviously, I mean, we are all located on the coast of British Columbia, so our primary concern is tankers. And because the Northern Gateway Pipeline is intended to bring crude oil to the coast of British Columbia, then obviously that's our concern around pipeline. But our major concern is an oil spill on the coast of BC. That would have catastrophic impacts on our way of life, our culture, our sustenance, our economy. It's just almost unimaginable.
So if there were to be a spill, what do you think would happen there? I know we talked yesterday about this, and you had mentioned that there would be so much jobs out of the picture as well.
If there was ever to be a spill, if we were to allow this project to go ahead and we had the inevitable spill, if all of the spill in one of these very large crude carriers was to make its way out of the ship, there'd be enough oil in that ship to cover the whole coast of British Columbia. And a lot of people think I'm exaggerating when I say this, but these carriers carrying, you know, much more oil than the Exxon Valdez. And the Exxon Valdez spill, if that had been in British Columbia, it would have covered the coast all the way from the top end of Vancouver Island to the BC-Alaska border. So we're not exaggerating this. These are the realities. And within that geographic area, there are about 30,000 jobs that depend on the environment that we have today. And $1.5 billion in revenue into British Columbia every year. And these are sustainable jobs, renewable jobs. They happen every year. To ask British Columbians and coastal First Nations to accept a project that is dealing with a non-renewable resource, to jeopardize all of this, an industry in large part that's been carrying on for about 100 years, their canneries and processing and fishing and all species has been going on for well over 100 years on the coast of BC. To try and interrupt that for the sake of a project that's going to create maybe 100, 150 jobs maximum in BC is lunacy. It just doesn't make any sense.
So I know with our conversation yesterday as well that you said Coastal First Nations won't present to the panel until September this year. And so what do you think you're going to say to the panel at that time?
Coastal First Nations are... You know, our individual communities are making presentations as we speak. The very first presentation was made by one of our original members, the Haisla, and certainly Bella Bella and Kitisou and Metlakatt and all the others will make presentations as time goes on. But Coastal First Nations, as an organization representing everyone, will present a number of the studies that we have done. We have looked a lot more closely at issues around tanker spills and cleanup technology and the safety of pilots and the routes that they're taking and holding areas in case of storms. And we have found that, Enbridge, this project has not really, they have not done an adequate job in preparing information for this joint review panel. So we're going to add to that body of knowledge in order to make sure that this panel recognizes the risks inherent in this the project.
So if the project, after the hearings and everything, was given the green light, what kind of position do you think Coastal First Nations would have at that time?
Well, it won't change the position of Coastal First Nations for sure. It would mean that we would then have to move into more of the legal arena. So, you know, west of the Rockies and certainly along the Northern Gateway route, there are no treaties. And so First Nations throughout this this the geography of this project have Aboriginal rights, and we have title. And those can't be taken lightly. Those are protected by the Constitution of Canada. And they've been those rights have been affirmed by the Supreme Court, and we're prepared to go back and demonstrate to Enbridge and to the federal government that indeed this project is not in the interests of British Columbia, and certainly not in the interests of Coastal First Nations. And really not even in the interests of Canada. You know, there's a lot of spin on this that somehow this is in the national interest, but it isn't. And, you know, those things are starting to come out now, and I think this panel is going to be able to see that.
That was Art Sterritt, Executive Director of Coastal First Nations.
I'm playing it. Moonani, money.
That was the original theme song for the Arctic Winter Games, Play Your Part. And that song is going around the world's northern communities. It's already made its way through communities in Russia, Finland, Sweden, and Canada since last spring. Pam Boyd is the chair of the Arctic Winter Games theme song relay, and she'll tell us about this really exciting initiative.
Well, first of all, Arctic Winter Games is a multi-sport festival, and it involves culture as well. And like so many, like the Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, Pan American Games, that kind of thing, there usually is a relay, and often it's a torch relay. Canada Games, that often happens. And for the Arctic Winter Games, we've never had a relay before. And so for the first time ever in the Games history, we are doing a relay, but instead of a torch or a baton, we are actually doing a theme song relay. And how this works is that a theme song, it has been created, sort of the base theme song, and it is sort of the thread that's winding through the circumpolar north to each of the participating regions of the games. So along with that, we have sent a high-definition video camera, and we're asking each region to capture images, capture sound of people, of things, of wind, just whatever it is that is that picks their region. And with that comes the song. If they can weave the song into their video, be it singing it or playing it or humming or dancing to it, that's all captured. So what's going to happen is that all these video and audio clips will come back to us here at the Host Society, and we have an amazing music production company that's taking all these clips, editing them, mixing them, and creating this masterful and amazing music video that will showcase the whole circumpolar north, and that will be unveiled at the opening ceremonies.
Wow, it sounds like an incredibly great idea. And how did this actually come about?
Just brainstorming. I've been involved with relays before, both for Canada Games and for the Olympic and Paralympic Games, and I've seen just how powerful a tool, a vehicle it has been, these things are, to engage the people, to have them become people who are not even close to where the games are going to take place, be a part of it because they want to. And it also raises the awareness of the games and its mission and its values. And they're very inspirational. I don't know if you were around when the Olympic torch relay came through Sudbury, but the people just lined the streets and were just in awe and excited and hopeful. And so with that in mind, we wanted to do a relay that could capture some of the same feelings and objectives. And because by the time we came to it, the idea of doing a torch relay, which is pretty comprehensive and quite costly, we couldn't do that. But the idea of sound and song is a universal thing. Music is a universal thing. And so that's how it came about.
Wow, so I know it's already been traveling, and so what are some of the things been like?
It has been absolutely amazing, because I think you can appreciate this was a whole new idea, and when we launched this, we had no idea what was going to happen when we sent the camera and the song up, but it has. It's traveled to Alaska, to Russia in the Amalo-Nenets region, to the Sami area in northern Sweden, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Russia, and into Greenland, in Canada. It's been to Nunavik and Nunavut and northern Alberta and the NWT, and so now it's back here in the Yukon. And we've had some absolutely amazing things happen. As a matter of fact, in Russia, in Yamalo-Nenets, they had the song translated into their indigenous language, and then they had this beautiful choral group perform it in their language, and it was just so great. The visuals, we really are seeing the true circumpolar north, and because we started this last March, we're getting to see it through the year. It's not just all winter scenes, so it's pretty cool. So if you haven't seen reindeer herding, there's reindeer herding shots. There's, of course, there's dog machine shots. There's definitely cultural things, but also the blend with the sports. And that's what our games is all about.
That was Pam Boyd, chair of the Arctic Winter Games theme song relay. You've been listening to Bomb Siddha with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bomb Siddha is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment in a cross-genre music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddha means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bomseda.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddha.